Welcome to Exploring the Mystical Side of Life with your host, Linda Lang.
Hi, this is Linda Lang from ThoughtChange.com. Here on Exploring the Mystical Side of Life, we are delving into topics of spirituality, metaphysics, mysticism, and a whole lot more. I have a real treat for you this week. I have Carrie Hummingbird, a soul guide, and she just happens to be the author of a really interesting book I'm reading right now called The Second Wave. Thanks for joining me today, Carrie.
Thanks for having me, Linda. I'm excited for see what will be revealed during our conversation today.
Well, it's a really interesting title of this book. In today's world, most people think of the second wave as a repeat of coronavirus happening, but this has nothing to do with coronavirus. Perhaps you'd like to explain what the second wave is.
Well, when I got the call to start writing this book, which is in February 2019, I didn't know what the second wave was. I got this message, you know, this download, you're writing a new book. I said, great, what's it about? The second wave. What's that? What are you talking about? And the message I got was, oh, go look back at Dolores Cannon because you've already seen something about this. I said, oh, okay. So I went on YouTube and I looked it up. And sure enough, I found her video talking about the three waves of volunteers. And she actually has a book about it as well. I never read the book, but I did check out the video again just to refresh myself. So this is from work that she did. She actually, in her lifetime, she passed away a few years ago, but in her lifetime, she actually invented this deep hypnosis technique, which her daughter is running a school to teach even to this day called quantum healing hypnosis technique, QHHT. It gets you down so that your practitioner can ask questions of your soul self, like your subconscious self, and get answers. And during this practicing of this technique, she actually was able to ask questions of the souls, and they started telling her things like, oh, I'm part of the first wave, I'm part of the second wave. And she thought, well, now this is really interesting. What does that mean? So I'm channeling the book about the second wave. And so the second wave of volunteers, these are all volunteers to the planet from other places, either volunteers who said, yeah, I'll do another tour of duty on Earth. It really is like a tour of duty. I'll do another tour of duty on Earth. You know, sure, I've been here a lot of times. I'll come back and do another one. I know what it's like there. And then there's other ones like who came and said, yippee, I'll try this thing out. This is this really cool opportunity to send human consciousness into the age of Aquarius. That sounds like a great thing. I'm very excited by that. So this is all by choice. So all of us that came as volunteers, we chose to be here, by the way. So if you're really regretting that decision right now, then hopefully you'll find some encouragement in this broadcast. The second wave are people, souls who we've either done this with other planets, we've either done this with other species, like we've got some experience with uplifting the consciousness of a species. We've already done this other places. And this is, of course, a unique opportunity. So it's, you know, there's nothing like a human being. So, you know, that's a totally different thing. So everybody gets to learn this time around.
Now, this book, The Second Wave, is a channel book. You are expressing wisdom from White Eagle.
For a while, I didn't know who I was working with. You know, I knew I had very clear guidance, but I didn't know where it was coming from. And I was given names along the way. I was told White Eagle a number of times, but I just didn't get the message. You know how it is, like when you get these signs and synchronicities, and then other people even say things to you, and you just don't get it. That was me. So at some point, I finally realized who it was. But I've been getting these signs. Like I remember one time, I think the furthest sign back was after I started my spiritual path. I was learning about Drum Journey, and I had found, I discovered Sandra Ingerman has all those Soul Journeys CD of little 15-minute shamanic drum journeys. And I was in the bathtub. I like to take it in the bathtub, put my earbuds in, and just so I had just taken one of those drum journeys. I was relaxing. And then in the space of nothing, all of a sudden, this like it seemed like a periscope was coming toward me. And then getting bigger and bigger and closer. And then the face on the inside was this like Native American man, like medicine man chief with like the whole regalia, like the feathers and everything. And he came real close. And then he said, opened the suns in their hearts. And then he went away. Like, wait a second, that's not enough information. Come back, you know, like, what are you talking about? And then flash forward to later in my journey, I wanted to reconnect with my Cherokee ancestry, because I have a great grandmother who is full-blooded Cherokee, but I never could connect with that because she could pass for white. So she, you know, she left the people and she changed her name. And so that little trail, that connection was lost. And so I thought, well, you know, I've done enough shamanic drum journey and I've been exposed now to shamanic healing. You know, I figure, well, there's somebody that knows how to connect me to my ancestors, you know? So I went to the Smoky Mountains and I went to the obvious tourist destination place for going to look for this kind of thing. And I went to the Cherokee Oconaloftee replica village. And the first year I found nothing. The second year, I think I was more pitiful. And so I got connected with a man who actually connected me. He said, okay, I'll help you out. And he was only there for the one day. Isn't that interesting? The one day that I was there, he happened to show up. All this persistence, I got led to this man and he said, okay, I'll see you outside. And so I'm like walking to the parking lot to wait for him. And all of a sudden I get this like softball size energy ball, like it's flung through the back of my head where my head meets my neck. And I feel it spreading through my whole brain and expanding everything. And I have to sit down because I'm dizzy. You know, like this is a very new experience. Really, I mean, I was seeing the trees breathe. It was really trippy for like a while, you know, and I was on no drugs or anything. It was just this ball of energy came in. I now know that that's the mouth of God. And so that's the place where your ancestors can enter you. And this ancestor entered me and I started working with this ancestor. Some people call this a walk-in, I guess, but it's not a complete walk-in. He didn't like take over my being. He came in and merged with me. So he's merged his consciousness with mine. So he helped me to heal my issues of not honoring and respecting myself as a woman. And through many, 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 many lessons, to also get quiet in my mind, because he, you know, just be like too much thinking going on. And then also I would help him heal, because as soon as he integrated with my being, he started coming into form. All of a sudden I started having memories of the Trail of Tears. I started remembering it from a personal perspective. And I was on the Trail of Tears. I remember like seeing the hardships and experiencing the hardship, seeing people die that I cared about, and feeling a tremendous sense of responsibility for feeling like I had led people to the decisions that were leading to this event, that I had this tremendous responsibility for it because I was the peace chief. I was advocating for peace, and peace has led us here. For years, if I ever thought about it, I would just burst into tears. So I've done a lot of healing on it so I can be here today talking about it without the emotional reaction, but it has been like practically a decade. I mean, it's been like a lot of healing to integrate that aspect and bring healing. So this is White Eagle, you know, this is a version of White Eagle. From what I understand, it's like, you know, we're multidimensional and we have many lifetimes. And so this is another lifetime that White Eagle experienced. And then I was integrating this into my being to support me in this incarnation to understand my role, because we've actually chosen at a higher level that the path of indigenous people, the path of earth connection, is actually the path we're promoting as far as the lineages that will go forward into new earth. This is the cognitive understanding, and across all of the ways that that manifests itself across all cultures, but the original connection, whatever culture or ancestry you're from, like the original connection with the earth is what we're promoting going forward.
And so, Carrie, when you say earth connection, do you mean that the future of humanity will hold that closer connection to the earth like it did in the past?
Absolutely. That's where we're headed. We're headed back into nature. You know, we're headed out of the high rises and into, you know, single story homes, like single story dwellings. Like we need to be as close as possible to the earth to stay connected and aware, and lots of nature, lots of trees, you know, no more, like, I wouldn't say no more parking lots, but like this whole parking lot culture, parking lots and malls everywhere, that's not going to be the way it's going to be. That's the way it is right now, but that's the path that's led us to being, to coming disconnected from our mother. And, you know, we need to be connected because we're part of like we're cells in an organism, and we need to be, you know, fully remembering ourselves as a cell of this organism and act accordingly in a healthy way. And so connection with the earth is actually vital in order to do that.
Have you gotten a sense of how this spiritual teaching will evolve?
Yeah, so we all have a role to play, let's put it that way. And the more we connect in with the earth consciousness, where we each have a unique design, we have a unique thumbprint. We talk about that in the book. That unique thumbprint design is actually your incarnation purpose and goals for this lifetime. And the gifts that you come. So it's sort of like you slid into an avatar and, you know, a thumbprint suit, and you have all these gifts and things to unlock inside your thumbprint suit. And all of those are useful for the collective once you fully embody them and express them. And so then when you're tapped into the earth consciousness, then you allow the earth consciousness to direct you exactly where you need to be for maximum usage of your gifts, for maximum service, and of course, maximum fulfillment. Because when you reach the state of consciousness, it's extremely fulfilling for your gifts to be in service and to be appreciated and wanted, you know? So we all are appreciated and wanted with our gifts. And so we all have a different role to play in order to facilitate that. For a long time, it used to really irritate me because I'd be like, I can see like perfection. Like I can see what perfection is. And then I can see the gap between where we are and where the perfection is. And I'm like, why can't you people see it? Well, because I'm meant to see that, you know? So there's others like me who also have that gene key. And that's a unique gene key. Not everybody sees that because, you know, then I wouldn't be special and be helpful, right? So everybody has their own special gifts. I think there's going to be people that are intended to be messengers. I know I'm a messenger. I'm also a teacher, but I'm a messenger in a bigger sense. You're a messenger. You've got a platform. You've got a podcast. There are people that are meant to be messengers. And then those people are like little lighthouses that other people can come to and then either fold into a community there or get redirected someplace else with people that don't like to be messengers. They're not designed to be messengers, but they're really good teachers. So it just depends, you know? So it takes a lot, as you know, I mean, it's a big journey to a spiritual awakening. This is not a tiny little easy button journey. This is a significant journey. It takes handholding. It takes consistent effort. It takes a teacher who can be present with you. And as such, as the teachers, we can't handle more than like, you know, maybe 30 a year. Like it's kind of limited, like what we can, the people we can actually guide on this process in an effective way is a pretty small number of people. It's not a large number of people. So, you know, we have other offerings, like that's why I gear my other offerings to, you know, people that are not quite ready to go into the full program. They've got to have something to start with, right? So it's a funnel. People that are ready are on the outside, in the periphery, and getting what they need. And then as you come closer and closer and closer, then you get into the heart of it, you get the juicy stuff, but you got to commit. But it takes a while to commit because of all the layers of human crust that get built up around your heart and make you forget who you are and what you're really supposed to do.
In the book, you call it earth amnesia, that we really forget our divinity gifts, our purpose. What kind of tips do you have to help people wake up? There's so many people who want to know their purpose and want to, you know, get on that path.
There's no hiding. That's the first thing I want to say. Like, there's no hiding at all. So Mother Earth knows every thought, every feeling, everything about you. You can't hide anything. Even the thoughts that you don't really want to have, but they keep showing up and you're apologizing for them. She knows everything, like all of it. So you're not hiding anything. And your guides know too, because the whole thing is psychic. Everything is psychic. And they've even proved it now. Like I think Bruce Lipton has now proven that your thoughts are like outside of your head by a good couple of feet. You know, they can be detected. So like we're going into that part of our consciousness. We're going to learn how to psychically communicate. We already are, but we're going to be more aware of it. So how do you get through this? Well, you've got to practice things to open up your third eye. On a biological level, there's a really great book written by one of my teachers, Dr. Alberto Rialdo and Dr. Perlmutter. That book is called Power Up Your Brain. That book suggests a course of supplementation to get your brain and your pineal gland decrusted, right? And it also has some shamanic tools for clearing out your chakras of a lot of extra heavy density and crust. so you can be more in fluidity. And that practice of clearing your chakras is really important because you've got to stay in the flow. And most of us get a little crusty inside our bodies. We just don't even know we're crusty. So we've got to keep the energy moving. So that supports your third eye and your brain in order to facilitate the awareness, right? And then also exercise, movement, good diet, water, and then meditation, you know, learning how to meditate, however you can do it. If you need a moving meditation, then do a moving meditation. If you need, you know, yoga, then do yoga. If you need to run for 6 miles before you feel better, then run for 6 miles. It doesn't really matter your pathway. You know, if you can just sit there out the gate and be quiet, then great. Awesome for you. That doesn't normally happen, but if that happens for you, cool. You know, be quiet.
How important do you think self-reflection is in this process?
Self-reflection is the whole thing. I mean, contemplation, self-reflection, inner navigation, like when you have something happen, a conversation, and then you notice that you get a pain in your will center, like right in the center of your stomach or right here, and then it like aches for a second. Pay attention to that. That is something important, actually. That's not just a fleeting thing that has no significance. That's actually very significant. And so explore that. Like, what's going on with that? How come I'm having that feeling? What's happening in there? So the trick is to learn how to navigate these inner spaces and give yourself the time to do that. Like most people, the alarm clock goes off, they wake up, they hop out of bed, and they get started with their day with like absolutely no like inner navigation. What I do is the alarm goes off and then I've got to like linger in that space for a while because I'm like assessing, I'm navigating, I'm checking myself out on the inside. I'm seeing what I'm feeling. Like, what were the dreams that were coming through? How are those feeling in my body? What messages do I have for today? You know, what's my heart saying? You know, and I could be there for an irritatingly long time just because I'm still in that inner inquiry. I'm not ready to get up yet. That's how I do my meditation primarily. You know, I also do formal meditation, but I like that morning time, you know, navigation. It's like, oh, where'd that come from? It's more curiosities. I think we've been trained to be judgmental. That's just a conditioning. That's a conditioning of our egoic society. We've been trained to be judgmental. So we just need to know that that's a conditioning. And whenever you see that, flip that into curiosity and go, oh, I wonder where that comes from. Huh? And then to realize I don't have to have it. Like, I can change it is the other thing. Because a lot of times we just surrender. We say, well, that's not the surrendering I like to do.
Sometimes those ruminating thoughts, you know, they don't give up easily.
No, they don't. I used to have a brain that would just really obsess over things. And I remember the first time that I did, I'm going to give a practical tool, but I first want to go over to this story. I remember the first time that I did a ayahuasca ceremony and I had to take extra medicine. For anybody who's done the ceremony, you know what that means. I had to take extra medicine because I couldn't get through my egoic like resistance. And whenever you do that, like you usually have a very intense journey after that point and it lasts for way past everybody else's journey. Anyway, so I was in that. And so at the end, I finally did get some healings and the medicine started working. And then I was on like Mr. Toad's Wild Ride. But the part I wanted to mention is at the end, what happened was I was lying there when everybody else is asleep and I'm trying to sleep, but I can't because I can hear the chattering voice. I can actually hear the chattering ego and it's so loud, like a megaphone in my head. And for the first time, I'd never noticed it before, but it was always going. It's just that I never noticed it before. And now it was like a megaphone. It was so loud because parts of me had gotten so quiet. I was finally able to hear how loud it was. I was like, wow. And I just asked ayahuasca. I'm like, can you please help me with this because this is so loud and can you turn it off? And just like that, it was like, bam. So I learned something about myself that day, but before I had that experience, long before I struggled with this big mind that would never shut up. So what I did was I used to, when I first started my path about 9 years ago, I was like, okay, I got to deal with this thing because this thought just keeps coming and coming and it's making me crazy. It won't stop. So I started learning about the power of the elements, you know, the earth, the water, the fire, the air. And I'm very drawn to fire. Obviously I love fire. I also love water, but fire is a fast acting It's like quick purification. So I got used to like opening sacred space and calling on the power of fire. And then I made up these little strips of paper. I would just cut these little strips of paper just for this purpose. Whenever one of these pesky thoughts came up, and I would go, okay, strip of paper. And I would write the thought down on the paper and to capture it. And then I would blow into the paper exactly how that thought was making me feel. Like, this is the frequency I would like to contend with and remove or transform somehow. And then I would burn that thing, give it to fire, release it. And I would write my new thought like 15 times because you got to fill it. You got to fill it back in. Like you remove it, but now you have to, what do you want in its place? Because if you don't, something else will just come and go into that spot. So like, this is the thing, this is the new agreement, you know? So that method was pretty effective. I mean, I might have to burn that same thought 15, 20 times, but then eventually my brain started to go, oh, she doesn't want that one. Okay, she's in command.
I was just given a little exercise that worked amazingly for one of those ruminating thoughts that was preventing me from actually falling asleep. And it was really interesting because it's like I watched myself just automatically do it. And I'm like, oh, how brilliant is that? And it was very simply to, you know, your thoughts are going on. And I heard myself say, Linda, step into the light. And then I would be surrounded by light and it would be peaceful. And all of those thoughts stopped. I maybe had to do that like 3 times, but not right away. I'm going to take that little exercise and I'm going to make good use of it whenever I find myself in a situation that I'm judging.
I love that. It's so simple. And now since all of this, I've also been studying Paul Selig's work, S-E-L-I-G.
I love Paul.
His work is amazing. And the guides that work with him, I'd have to say, he's a really good channel. He always is telling us, I'm just a channel. He has a really great thing now that they do of going to the upper room. So I'm quite a ways down the teaching. So if this is your first time hearing about it, you really should start at the beginning. But this is far down the teaching. It just came out with this year, is about going to the upper room, like lifting all that you see before you to the upper room. So I started doing that with these situations in my life that I just feel like are, you know, I've got judgment about them. Like there's a lot of things that I feel like probably should have judgment about, but I'm like, okay, even those things, I think I should have judgment about that because that's just plain wrong. Then I will go, all right, I know who I am in truth. I know what I am in truth. I know how I serve in truth. I am in the upper room. You know, I've come. I'm in the upper room. I lift all that I see before me to the upper room and behold, I make all things new. And then I just sit back and I wait for the new impression. Because I know that what I'm making new is me. I'm making myself new, my way of relating to whatever's happening out there. I'm making this new. And what he often talks about is that we want to elevate human consciousness, but we're not going to be able to do that through judgment, shaming, and blaming. Like that is the old paradigm. So it doesn't work that way. And so it's more like a trusting that as I accept and surrender to these things in my purview, things I'm witnessing, and I lift it to the upper room, that magically now somehow those things change or the frequency changes. And then the elevated frequency of the upper room, probably those things aren't going to happen. It's not resonant. One example I can see why that might be true, Linda, is that if we're all psychic in the next place, in the upper room, after we've, you know, sort of moved through this bump we're going through right now, if we're all psychic, then there really isn't any more lying, is there?
You wear your secrets. You might think no one knows, but their energy system communicates with your energy system. You know, the angels know, the guides know.
Everybody knows.
Everybody knows.
That part goes away, right? So like we won't actually have some of these horrendous things happening because everybody knows. You can't deny it or lie about it anymore. So that vantage point when that message came through, it helped me to accept this practice that Paul Selig is teaching. I was like, okay, I'll go with that.
So for any of the listeners who don't know Paul Selig, you can start with his book, I Am Word.
It's powerful, and you can get the audio. I like the audio version because then you can hear the resonance through his voice as he speaks it. It's pretty great.
I like the written one. I can feel it working on my energy field, so I can only read a few pages at a time.
It works very quickly. Yeah.
It's amazing. Why don't you share your contact information, your website, and your book?
Absolutely. So the book is called The Second Wave, Transcending the Human Drama. And it can be found on Amazon. And you can go to my website for more information about me and my programs. Also, Soul Nectar Show, which Linda's going to be on. So my website is kerrihummingbird.com, K-E-R-R-I, hummingbird.com. And my show, Soul Nectar Show, is at soulnectar.show. So if you want to listen to that, yeah.
We'll put lots of links in the show notes for everyone. Easy access. Thank you again for being my guest. And thank you for listening to this week's episode of Exploring the Mystical Side of Life. You'll find us on YouTube, Apple Podcasts, Spotify. Come and visit me at thoughtchange.com and see what energy medicine can do for you. Bye for now.